Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Thursday, June 27th. Currently, we've got 60 degrees here in Old Town Park City, 65 degrees in the Heber Valley, under mostly sunny skies. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Sure was hoping for a bit of rain, Nate.
I know. We kind of got skipped over. Most of it stayed in Utah County, so just shy of Salt Lake County, Wasatch back. We still have a chance of thunderstorms again today. So if we missed out yesterday, we've got a front sliding through. Should interact with some of the moisture in place, generating showers and thunderstorms this afternoon across Park City and Heber. Highs near 79 for Park City, near 86 in Heber today. Moisture clears out tonight. In fact, looking at quite a bit of sunshine for Friday. Should be a really pleasant day. 78 for the high after 51 for an overnight low. A little bit of cloud cover hangs on tomorrow morning, but otherwise should clear out to mostly clear skies leading up into the weekend. High pressure building back in. Warming temperatures back up. Should see ample sunshine Saturday, Sunday with mid-80s for highs across Park City. Overnight lows in the mid to upper 50s. Heber looking at sunshine and mid to low 90s over the weekend. Should see some breezy winds. We have another weak front approaching Sunday into Monday. Not expecting moisture from that, but it will help cool our temperatures back off just a little bit. So we will drop in Park City from the mid-80s on Sunday into the low 80s. In fact, right near 80 degrees early next week. Sunshine should continue with a 83 expected as we get into Wednesday. For Heber City, we're looking at 87 for the high on Monday and on Tuesday with a high near 90 by Wednesday. So cooling off from the mid to low 90s over the weekend. Hopefully, yeah, you guys get some storms today. It's on track. It's looking pretty good, at least for right now.
Okay. Thanks, Nate.
You bet.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up, we'll be checking in with Laura Anthony with our trails report for the week. Later on, Summit County Councilmember Chris Robinson calling in to recap yesterday's county council meeting. Executive Director of the Alfangen Ski Museum, Annie Baumer, will be in to introduce herself and to reveal this year's Intermountain Ski Hall of Fame inductees. And finally, Park City and Summit County Arts Council Executive Director Jocelyn Scudder will be joined by Peg Bodell talking about this month's gallery stroll as well as the Miners 9 exhibit this weekend. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. Today's guests include Nobel Prize-winning scientist Thomas Cech, who has worked on RNA for his entire career. We'll talk about his new book, The Catalyst, RNA and the Quest to Unlock Life's Deepest Secrets. Then 2024's National Geographic Explorer and Ecological Engineer Nadina Galley discussing her book, The Nature of Our Cities, Harnessing the Power of the Natural World to Survive a Changing Planet. All of that coming up on today's Cool Science Radio at 9. Right now on the phone with us with our trails report from Mountain Trails Foundation, I have Executive Director Laura Anthony. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and happy Thursday, Park City. We've got Rick from Mountain Trails reporting that we've got just about everything on the upper mountain is good to go. There is still some snow on the usual north-facing aspects of the 9K, and I guess it's particularly heavy duty and sticking around up in the Scotts Bowl and Blazing Saddle Zone. We will be working on Jenny's and Seldom Seen today, so please be aware of the crew. They'll be on machines, so please don't try to pass them until you've made eye contact with the driver and they give you the wave on through there. Looks like Wasatch Trails Foundation is saying that everything is good. They will be spraying for thistle in Pine Canyon Bike Park starting on Monday. So beware of that. Maybe a good place to keep the kiddos out of. Blue Sage Ranch needs some tires and shoes, and if you're looking for a new trail, go check that out. You can find out right where that is on their website. And then Dave from Basin Rec is reporting that everything is good to go. There's still a good size snow hike-a-bike at the top of Pine Cone. So it sounds like the upper levels of our trail system are still covered in snow, so maybe stay away from that area. Looks like Rod's Trailhead will be closed tomorrow and Monday for Summit County road work, and looks like they're clearing vegetation on Flying Dog this week through next Friday. They wanted to remind you that it is side veg season, so please give space and don't pass the equipment operators until you've received the wave to go past. We've got Corey from South Summit Trails Foundation reporting that there will be a mountain bike race out at Slate Creek. This is a great time of year to ride Slate Creek. However, this Saturday from 9 to 4 o'clock There won't be probably any parking. The parking lot will be crowded there, so maybe pick another day to go see the Slate Creek trails. That about rounds it up for today's trail report.
Okay, I know that you also want people to know about the public comment that's going to be happening tomorrow morning at before the Park City Council.
Yeah, tomorrow at 10 a.m. There will be a meeting before City Council in Council Chambers. If you've got something to say about e-bike use on single track trails, come on by, and Council would love to hear from you. You can also email them at council_mail@parkcity.org.
And will Mountain Trails be taking a position?
We will. And it's a really long, complicated, complex issue. So we'll keep that for tomorrow morning.
Okay. Laura, thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Leslie. Bye.
Salt Lake City's 2034 Winter Olympic Game bid is charging ahead to a final election that, following a technical presentation to members of the International Olympic Committee this week, KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more on that.
Wednesday marked the first time Utah organizers spoke to all 107 members of the IOC, who will vote on whether to award the 2034 Winter Olympics to Salt Lake City on July 24th. Utah is not facing opposition and is widely considered to be named the 2034 host next month. Salt Lake City Committee for the Games President and CEO Fraser Bullock is not taking anything for granted.
We are humble and hopeful. We believe we're in excellent shape, but until the vote is taken, we are absolutely 100% focused on every element of our bid and making sure we do the absolute best we can.
Under IOC rules, Bullock wasn't allowed to comment on the specifics of the private virtual meeting, but he said the committee made the case for why Salt Lake City is a great candidate to host in 2034.
We reviewed each venue. We went through our history of hosting events. We covered our transportation plans, the accommodations plans, the governance model, and our vision.
Bullock said they highlighted the announcement that the bobsled and skeleton world championships will be held at Utah Olympic Park for the first time in 2029. If the IOC gives Salt Lake City the go-ahead next month, Utah Olympic Park, Park City Mountain, Deer Valley Resort, and Soldier Hollow Nordic Center are all slated to host events in 2034. The bid committee has already reserved 21,000 local hotel rooms, including over 1,200 rooms in Summit and Wasatch counties. The bid committee will make a public presentation to IOC members on July 24th in Paris ahead of the final vote. Tom Kelly, spokesman for Utah's 2034 bid, said they are preparing for celebrations.
This selection date has wound up on what Utah calls Pioneer Day. So there is a built-in audience overnight lining up for the Pioneer Day parade. We hope to capitalize on that with a watch party. We also have many communities around the region who are looking to do celebrations that day and tie in the games.
The vote on July 24th is scheduled for 11 a.m. Paris time, which is 3 a.m. in Utah. Park City Mayor Nan Worrell said the city is organizing a party in collaboration with Summit County, the Park City Chamber, and Utah Olympic Park. Details will be announced soon. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
The Summit County Council met yesterday, and on the phone with the meeting recap, I have Council Member Chris Robinson. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, Leslie.
Let's start with the Housing Authority discussion. Summit County Economic Development and Housing Director Jeff Jones gave a presentation on creating a Housing Authority. This was after the County Council had talked with the Park City Council about creating a regional authority. So what's Jeff suggesting here? Summit County to have its own Housing Authority, or is he bringing back this idea of a regional Housing Authority?
Well, I call it a housing authority light. The joint discussions involved a pretty big annual budget, like $1 million a year, and creating another agency. The budget for what Jeff Jones was proposing is going to come at a subsequent meeting, but it was going to create a dashboard for monitoring and keeping track of the affordable housing and and providing a clearinghouse for information. It could be expandable to include Park City or Camas or other communities. It's not the full-blown, what I'll call expensive housing authority that was talked about with jointly with the city. And I frankly have been, you know, concerned that we spend a lot of money, that we get into a plan that spends a lot of money that we should be spending on actually trying to get the housing instead of an organization to talk about it.
Okay.
That's an oversimplification, but.
Sure. Again, so this is just starting on base for Summit County only with the opportunity to expand if, in fact, that would need to be done.
Yes.
All right.
But it's not anticipated to involve a large staff or a large budget.
Yeah. You said that numbers of what it would cost are coming later. How much later? I mean, what are we talking about? What's the ballpark here?
I don't know the ballpark. As far as the dollar amount, I think in the next few weeks, I hope that they would flesh out more of a plan. That Jeff just wanted to give the council an update and get input as to whether it's something we'd like him to consider, and we said yes. Subject to seeing the details.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you didn't see how what Jeff Jones described would create any new housing. So is this, what, just the first step, as you called it, the Housing Authority light, and that comes later?
Well, we have other initiatives that we're deploying to try to create housing, such as analyzing the Klein-Dolly property and trying to determine, you know, if we can do some public-private partnership on housing and not just rely upon the inclusionary housing that we have in the basin, you know, in our ordinance. So the Housing Authority would augment that, but we're still, without the Housing Authority, we're still trying to create affordable housing in partnership or on our own.
Okay. You said that you wanted to wait until you see a budget, or at least a draft budget, before deciding on whether or not to move forward with that. So when do those budget discussions start?
Well, hopefully fairly soon. You know, the ball's in Jeff's court. And he's diligent. I would expect fairly soon. I can't give you a date.
All right. The county council didn't discuss or vote on closing the unpaved road 200 South near Camas that's causing a bunch of dust and speeding issues for residents there. They say the construction traffic from Toohey is to blame. Council seemed to favor closing the road with an emergency gate that would force traffic then through Toohey's front door. So does the council need to take an official vote on this? Or is that moving forward?
Well, we took a vote or gave guidance of similar to a vote at a ago. And, you know, I think our general feeling is that we don't want a lot of traffic on that road, and that we don't want to deprive Toohey of an emergency egress, but we don't want it to be the back door for all the construction traffic. And so we gave that guidance that we, you know, to pursue a crash gate. There are other landowners in the area and developers, and I understand there's a bit of a groundswell of opposition to our position. And so I think it's still to be fully resolved, but I think the council is strongly favoring a crash gate.
That opposition coming from the Wakara development or Wasatch County or from whom?
Well, I don't know exactly. I think from other, you know, Toohey is one thing, but there are some other properties in the vicinity that might have been wanting to piggyback on that road. And I haven't seen the detail, but I understand that there'll be more to come.
Okay. Summit County Public Works Director John Angel led a discussion about the F.J. Gilmore property near the Home Depot at Silver Summit. This is where High Valley Transit and Mountain Regional are building their new facilities. It looks like overall plans for the site include some new roads. So is this what, to help alleviate traffic around the new Justice Center and the entrance to Promontory, where we can see traffic back up quite a ways?
We're working on a roundabout at that Silver Summit exit too, and I enjoyed a decent pause there as I was trying to get through it this morning. So you're correct, there is a backup there. The F.J. Gilmore subdivision creates three roads, that are two of which are paved. One is called Seagull Lily. It's at the far south, and it's the street on which the High Valley facilities front. And then there's another one called Hot, that is an east-west road north of that. And then the main spine road is called Paintbrush. And what it does, it's not paved yet, but it's close to being pavable. And it runs from starting at the north right to the west of the Restore and ties into Silver Creek. And then it goes south and ties into these other two streets, and there's also a new connection to the Justice Center, so that you don't have to go as far along Silver Creek Road. It'll just, you know, it'll provide, like if you were going to the Justice Center coming from the south, you could come up the old Pace Frontage Road and then turn on to Seagull Lily or Hawk Nest, and then go on Paintbrush and turn into the Justice Center and avoid Silver Creek altogether. It'll be another ingress and egress to the Justice Center and better circulation for the whole area, especially important when we start to remodel and add on to the Justice Center. It'll make it much more convenient.
All right. Construction on the site has been difficult, as we've reported, because bedrock was throughout the site. From Angel's staff report, it says that the site has now been leveled. So when can we expect High Valley's new transit headquarters?
I took a tour, the board of High Valley did last Friday, with the contractor and staff, and it appears February is the completion date. There are three different buildings under construction, a storage barn, which is tilled up concrete, a maintenance building, and an administration building. And they are all to be completed, I think, by the end of February of this coming year.
Okay. Chief Financial Officer Matt Lovett told council that we could see a $15 million budget shortfall without some sort of tax increase next year. So where's the shortfall coming from?
Well, there's been a lot of things that have sort of jumped out at us. One of them was the county taking over out of the general fund all of emergency medical services pursuant to a change in state law. So starting last, I guess this fiscal year, it's $4 million there. We've been deferring a lot of, building a new cell at the landfill, which is another $4 million or something. Those are two of the main items. I think what Matt would like to see us do is, some of the options he proposed, and the one we seem to like best is to put on the ballot a 0.5% sales tax increase that is pursuant to a new emergency services sales tax that the legislature granted counties last session, that would, you know, about half or a little over half of our sales tax is paid for by visitors, and it would allow 0.5% would generate about the $15 million. It can only be used for certain things like EMS or search and rescue and some of the same things, solid waste, same things where we are experiencing some of these increases. So we will very likely be putting before the voters on November 5th a ballot measure to increase add the sales tax. It has to be renewed every 10 years. And that I think is the most elegant solution.
Yeah, but the risk, of course, is that if voters don't approve it and it fails, then what?
Well, we haven't had truth in taxation on the general fund for a long time. I can't tell you, 2008 or something, long time. And in order to generate a similar amount, we'd have to have like an 80% increase in the property tax, which we are very loath to do. So, you know, we would have to probably increase some taxes and make some, you know, do some cutting. But we think this is a good way to solve it. We hope the people will support us.
One of the other options that Matt Levitt presented was the 81% property tax increase. You said you didn't want to threaten voters with that property tax increase to get the sales tax passed through. Can you talk a little bit more about what you mean?
Well, I don't think that it's a good narrative to say vote for this sales tax or we're going to have to raise your taxes by 81%. That seems kind of, that's what I meant. I think we can make a very good case for the sales tax and say we're avoiding a large tax increase on the property by so doing.
My understanding is that Summit County has the second lowest property taxes in the state, and it's only been about 7 years, so 2017, since we raised taxes in the general fund. We often hear, you know, we're just prolonging the inevitable, so why not look at least a portion of a property tax increase?
Well, we did some Service Area 6 truth in taxation last year, and we likely will do something in the municipal fund. But yeah, you're right that we do have the lowest tax rate or second lowest in the state. That is because we have such a large tax base, you know, for our size. I mean, I forget, it's like $50 billion or something in taxable value for a relatively small county like ours. It's huge. So a little bit of levy goes a long way. So we do have a small tax base, a tax rate. But, you know, we'll consider it all. But I think, you know, without increasing the tax rate, most property taxpayers have seen from other things, you know, the school districts having the ability to maintain their certified levy without going through truth in taxation. For example, we've seen our tax bills. You've seen it. I've seen it. I suspect you've seen it. But we're paying a lot more in property tax than we did 2 or 3 years ago. And so there's some fatigue on that. And so we hear about it and we're sensitive to it.
All right. Couple other issues I want to get to real quick here. The council was scheduled to potentially approve a 15 mile per hour speed limit on basin recreation trails, as well as a ban on e-bikes on single track, except for those over 65 or with a mobility disability. The council is scheduled to hold a public hearing on those same regulations at its meeting tomorrow. The item yesterday was tabled for further discussion. Are you just waiting for the council then, is the city council here?
No, I don't think so. I mean, what we really liked was that the Basin Rec and the City Council have been studying this issue and want a uniform standard. Because, you know, when you're on a single track somewhere, you don't want to say, oh, let's see, I think I just crossed in to the unincorporated county. Now the rule is different. So we just thought it was a pretty momentous thing to just in one page staff report in one meeting with, you know, a couple of days notice, just ram it through. So we wanted to be a little bit more deliberate. We're very much in support of the concept, want to make sure that public has a chance to comment. Apparently there has been some comment in meetings held by Basin Rec and by Park City where there's been good public input. We just haven't heard it. And so we just want to be a little bit more deliberate. But I would predict that we're very likely to be in lockstep.
All right. The county council held a public hearing issued to related to issuing the $30 million in bonds to purchase the Skull Candy headquarters. No one showed up for public comment. So are we going to move forward with these then?
Yes.
And maybe just talk to us. So what will issuing these bonds do to property taxes?
Nothing. These bonds are being paid for by existing sales tax ability we have no bearing on the property tax.
Okay. And finally, just an opportunity. I know that you are one of the council members, I believe, negotiating with Dakota Pacific. Any news to report there? Is that going to come to the public soon?
Yes. Yes. I wouldn't say we're negotiating with Dakota Pacific. What we are doing is studying what public-private partnership would look like on the lands that we and they own on the eastern edge of the project area, which means the lands that where the Richens building, the transit center, the piece they have between it and the visitor center, the new Skull Candy building, and the parcel to the west of it that we suggested be traded to us. And so we have engaged some consultants to get survey information and a transit specialist to try to help us figure out how much parking might be needed and figure out how much could be laid out there. But I wouldn't say we're negotiating at all.
Okay.
But we will be coming back soon.
All right, Chris, I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
The Alfing and Ski Museum has named Annie Bomber as its new executive director, that following the retirement of longtime director Connie Nelson. Annie joins me now in studio. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks. So congratulations. And maybe just start by telling us a little bit about yourself and why you made a good candidate for this position.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've loved museums since I was a little kid. I started going to them, you know, at a very young age. And by the age of 7, I decided that that's what I wanted to do when I grew up. So I went to Weber State University and I got my undergrad in archaeology. And I studied medieval castles with that. And then I got my master's degree in museum studies. And I've worked at various museums around the state. And I've always loved the Alfing and Ski Museum. It's been talked about in the museum community. Everyone loves it. Everyone thinks it's great. So when I saw that Connie was retiring, I knew that she had set up a really great museum. And it was kind of the place I wanted to be. So
okay.
Here I am.
So what is the mission of the museum?
Yeah, so we preserve the snow sports history of the Intermountain region, which includes Utah, Idaho, and Wyoming. And we tell the story of the pioneers that kind of started skiing in Utah and the area, and specifically Alf Engen, who did a lot of that pioneering, helping with the resorts such as Alta and Snow Basin and designing those resorts, and how he impacted the sport and kind of where it's going today.
All right. It's an incredibly popular museum. I had no idea. I mean, what are we talking about? How many people come through every year?
Oh, we get about 500,000 people every year. It's amazing.
Yeah. So what's the biggest part of the job? Is it raising money to keep the museum going?
Yeah, so far that's really been it. We're actually working on a remodel for our entrance right now. So when I started, fundraising was kind of the number one thing that we have been working on to raise money for that project. We're redoing the Intermountain Ski Hall of Fame and kind of modernizing it and making room for additional people. We're showcasing the Barbara Ali Simon fashion collection and getting some climate controlled cases that will help preserve our collections better, as well as showcasing kind of the history of the U.S. ski team and Spence Eccles' impact on that.
Yeah. So by remodeling the entrance there, is that going to give you more exhibit space?
Yes. In theory, yes. We're kind of adding the exhibits that are already there, but we're making them bigger and more interactive.
Okay. And then the Intermountain Ski Hall of Fame, I don't think you can, there's room to hang up another plaque there, is there?
No, there isn't currently. So the remodel actually starts July 8th, and it is expected to be done in the middle of August for our new inductees. We have three new inductees this year that will be added.
Okay. And how many more plaques are you going to be able to hang with the remodel?
57.
Okay, so that's going to last you, what, 15 years?
Yeah, 10 to 15 years.
All right, and what's the long-term plan for that?
We are hoping to eventually expand, you know, with the possibility of the Olympics coming. We're going to need a whole lot more room, so we're looking at that as our goal to really expand everything.
Okay, and that was one of my questions. I mean, mm-hmm. Any plans as we look toward hosting the 2034 Games?
Yeah, we are starting to look at, you know, contemporary history and starting to collect that story as we're ramping up for the Games. We're doing a big celebration up at Utah Olympic Park on July 24th for the announcement that we'll be involved with, and really just getting excited for that. We're looking at the Olympic Museum, which is upstairs from the Alf Engen Museum, and trying to figure out how we can start to tell the modern story with the 2002 Olympics story as well.
So are you in charge of that Olympic Museum as well?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right. And as you mentioned, I mean, one of, I think, your first acts as executive director was to release the names of this year's Intermountain Ski Hall of Fame inductees. So tell us who's going to be inducted.
Yeah, so this year's inductees are Steve Banuse, Raylene Davis, and Bob Wheaton. And we're very excited about that. They're great candidates.
All right. Tell us a little bit how the process works to get these folks nominated.
Absolutely. So anyone can nominate a deserving candidate. They just have to be someone that has recorded exemplary achievements in skiing and snowboarding competition, innovation and development, and or made significant contributions to the overall promotion of skiing and snowboarding in the Intermountain region, which consists of just Utah, Idaho, and Wyoming. So we have a nomination form on our website, enginmuseum.org, and we have people from all over that submit some deserving candidates, and then we have a voting panel that does the final decision.
Okay, well, those of us who have been in Park City a while certainly remember Bob Wheaton, a long time general manager, president, and chief operating officer at Deer Valley Resort. So certainly relevant there. Tell us a little bit about the others, Raylene and Steve.
Yeah, so Steve rose to the scene as an exceptionally gifted skier, training at both Sundance and Snowbird. And he made his biggest impact on the sport as the executive director and coach of the Snowbird Sports Education Foundation for 30 years, where he built out an amazing snow sports community. And Raylene, she has been in the Utah ski scene for almost 40 years as the VP of Marketing and Operations for Ski Utah, where she's been instrumental in making Utah the ski destination it has come to be.
Okay, and then some of Bob's, other than his tenure, some of his highlights?
Yeah, so Bob has a great story. He started out at Deer Valley in 1979 as its maintenance manager and was able to work his way up to the general manager, where he led his team with kindness and respect for 40 years. And during his time, he oversaw Deer Valley's rise to a first-of-its-kind resort, all the way to becoming the number one ski resort in North America multiple times.
Okay. So when's the induction ceremony?
It's August 28th at 6 p.m. We're holding it at the Chateau Deer Valley this year. And for ticket information, you can go to our website under the News and Events tab.
Okay. Can you tell us how much tickets are?
Yeah, they're $165 for an individual ticket or $2,000 for a sponsor table, and that seats 10.
Okay. Let's see. And any exhibits that you want to highlight for those of us who live here?
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorite exhibits is our mountain sports simulator. I love that our museum is so interactive and kind of different from other experiences that you'd get at museums around the state. So it is a chairlift that you can go on, and it tilts and moves as you watch various sports such as powder skiing or mountain biking. And it kind of reminds me of like Soarin' Over California at Disneyland or something. It's just amazing that we have something like that. And then we have an avalanche safety exhibit that also really is interesting to me. I mean, with the big snowfall that we had a couple of years ago, that's where I really started to learn about the avalanches. I'm from Ogden originally, where we don't have avalanches like the Little Cottonwood Canyon and Big Cottonwood Canyon do. So I moved to Draper during that big snowstorm. So I started to really learn about how crazy these avalanches are and how they have to mitigate. And our avalanche safety exhibit has a lot of really great information about that as well.
Okay. Anything else you want people to know, Annie?
Come and visit the museum. We're really trying to make a community connection and bring in locals. We're going to start doing some community events and things that will entice families to come up. So make sure you come and check us out.
Okay, it's free.
It is free,
Just need to make it up the hill.
Yes, exactly. Just drive up that hill, a free museum and a great experience. Kids will love it.
Okay, Annie, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Again, Annie Baumer is the newly named executive director of the Alf Engen Ski Museum. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. In the studio now with an update from the Park City Summit County Arts Council, I have Executive Director Jocelyn Scudder, along with artist and founder of Miners 9, Peg Bodell. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Peg, let's start with you. You've got another Miners 9 exhibit happening this weekend, Miners Hospital?
That's right. Every last weekend of the month, we've got a few more until September will be our last one, but we started in March. We've got 9 artists every month. They rotate through so that we try and give the community different art, new artists, and something fresh to look at.
Okay, only 9 at a time because that's what you've got room
really,
for?
Really, that's the carrying capacity of the Miners Hospital. Nobody wants to walk all the way up to the third floor with 500 pounds of ceramics.
Okay, so you say you just do it the months of March through September, last weekend.
That's correct. The city leases out to Sundance the other months, so our last month will be September, but it's every last weekend.
Okay, and we're talking Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
That's correct. Friday, it starts at 2 until 7, along with the gallery strolls. And then on Sunday, noon to 7, Saturday, noon to 7, Sunday, noon to 4.
Okay, so how do you decide who gets to present each month?
Well, that's interesting that you should say that, because artists come in all different sizes, shapes, they have different needs. So there are some artists that this is a real opportunity for them to have a different exhibit space. So different artists, it might not work for them. Maybe they need a gallery. Maybe they need to be in PC Create rather than doing this sort of a thing. So I really try and mix it up. I try and have a ceramic artist, a photographer, a couple painters, a jeweler, something for everyone. And so it really depends on who needs something that particular month, and they'll get in touch with me, and then I'll sort them out and we'll make it work.
All right, so you do kind of a call for entries then?
I do, So if artists are wanting to do this sort of an exhibit, we do have July, August, and September is filling up, so I would have them contact me as soon as possible. That's miners9art@gmail.com.
All right. And then there's a fee to participate?
There is. Keep it very low. It's $100 for the entire weekend. And we provide all the marketing, the advertising. We provide digitals for them to put on their emails and Facebooks. We do signage throughout the town. And we have the lease then with the city.
All right. So who are the artists that you've got this weekend?
So this weekend we have Blossom Murray, who does a combination of painting, and she's bringing a new thing that she's started with. She's painting on clothing, which is going to be fun. Joe Cordery, who does ceramic artists. He's a ceramic artist, and he does real interesting organic shapes. Amy Engelbrecht is a painter. She's from over on the east side of the county. Steve Johnson does jewelry, does a lot with dinosaur bone. Kelly Gallagher is a metal artist. Karen Kendall is also works with oils and acrylics, large pieces. Kaylin Battersby and her husband Ryan Battersby, they are metal artists also. Lynn Dalton and Celine Dalton, they are actually from outside of Summit County, which I'm really welcoming people who want to come into our group. They do jewelry of all kinds.
Okay, so do you have a webpage, social media sites?
Social media, you can find us at Miners 9 Art. And then we don't have a webpage yet. We'll see what happens next year.
Okay. Anything else you want to note about Miners 9?
Just let us know if you want to be a participating artist.
Okay. Jocelyn, the monthly gallery stroll happening Friday night. Maybe talk to us a little bit about the details there.
Yeah, so again, we have the last Friday gallery stroll hosted by the Gallery Association. This takes place every last Friday of the month, and there are about 20 participating galleries that are in the association that participate in the stroll. And this Friday is actually, they have a fun theme. The Gallery Association has been doing themes this year to really add some new energy to the strolls. And on Friday, if people come out, they can participate in the scavenger hunt. And you're going to be searching for specific artworks. And if you do fill out a whole scavenger hunt form, you actually get entered to win a $250 gift card. So there is incentive. It's a great opportunity to bring maybe kids to the gallery stroll, a really accessible way to introduce art to many different people, and it's also a fun date night idea. So this Friday, 6 to 9 p.m., and many of those galleries exist on Main Street, but there are also a handful off of Main Street. There's Prospect Executive Suites down in the Prospector area and Create PC over on Kearns. So if you go to parkcitygalleryassociation.com, you can check out all of those participating galleries and find out more about that $250 gift card win.
Okay. Did the galleries give you any idea of some of the artists that they'll be having on display?
I think there are hints, yes. I have not seen the form yet that has been overseen by some of the administrators overseeing the Gallery Association. So that's all going to be a surprise, and it should be a really fun night.
Okay. As you mentioned, Create Park City will also be opening its summer exhibit for Gallery Stroll, and this is a little bit different than Gallery Stroll.
Yeah, it's a separate opening. So Create PC, which is a local artist collective hosted by the Arts Council and produced by the Arts Council. We have a summer exhibition opening on Friday as well, kind of in lockstep and in conjunction with the Gallery Stroll. And this is a really exciting night for us because we've added a handful of new artists. So we're up to 45 Summit County artists that will be represented in the gallery space. All local art, in addition to artisanal goods. We have skincare. We have jewelry. We have artisanal chocolates. So definitely come and check out the Create PC summer exhibition opening. It's going to be completely, if you've been before, we've completely reorganized. We've actually done a renovation in the Create PC gallery space. We ripped up the carpet. It has a fresh new coat of paint. And so we're really excited to showcase the new space. We've reoriented and a ton of new artwork. So please come out. We're also going to be hosting a bar for those of you who are 21 plus who enjoy some libations. So please come to Create PC and maybe start or end your gallery stroll there if you also want to do the scavenger hunt. We're also participating in the scavenger hunt. So lots going on and a great opportunity to support local artists.
All right. Well, tell us where Create PC is located.
Yes, it is at 1500 Kearns, space F110. So it's right behind the Tupelo Restaurant or Wells Fargo, but still really central in our town. Lots of great parking, super accessible, especially on your bike. So we encourage everyone to come out, and it is free and open to the public, so all are welcome.
Okay, and also the Park City Artists Association has an upcoming show on Saturday. Can you tell us about
that? I know,
that?
There is so much happening within the visual arts scene this weekend, which is super exciting. In addition to Miners 9, in addition to the Friday night opening at Create and Gallery Stroll, on Saturday, June 29th, Elevated Interiors is hosting an art show, and there's a handful of local artists that will be represented in this show. Kelly Gallagher, Liz Dranow, Denise Heal, Jean Hansen, M. Bellinga, David Winiger, Alexander Jacole, and Mitch Bedke. And so that show is 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. again on Saturday, June 29th. And it's located at Elevated Interiors, and it's a furnishings and design store. And the address is 6541 North Landmark Drive. So if I put the map in my mind, I think that's over by Staples and Walmart. And so, again, just out in the Kimball Junction area. It sounds like it's going to be free and open to the public. Again, another opportunity to support some great local artists.
Okay. Again, because you've got, so Kimball Junction,
I know it's
all
over.
Is he participating as well? So he'll be out in Peoa?
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly.
And then we've got the ones in Prospector, you and the other gallery.
And the Prospect Executive Suites, yes.
Okay. Finally, the Save the Date. This is the annual Summit Arts Market.
The Summit Arts Market, yes, save the date. So this is an annual show that the Arts Council produces out in Oakley at the Oakley Rodeo Grounds, the Red Barn. The Summit Arts Market will take place on July 13th, and it's from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. And again, this is a free opportunity to come and really enjoy a creative day with the family or friends. There'll be over 30 local artists and artisanal booths. We'll have live music, thanks to Mountain Town Music. They've programmed a really great live lineup. We're going to have a beer garden this year, so a great opportunity to sit in the sunshine and enjoy a beverage. And there'll be live demonstrations and food trucks. So this is a one-day show out in Oakley. It's a great opportunity, too, to just get out on the east side of the county. You know, SR 32 is that kind of main road that goes through Peowa, Oakley, Camas, and there's a ton of really great restaurants and shops. So sometimes I just love to go out there, or even before a hike when you go out on the Mirror Lake Highway, head out to Oakley and check out this really fun art and artisanal market on the east side. So again, that's July 13th from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. out at the Oakley Rodeo Grounds.
Okay, and how do you choose the artists that get to participate in this show?
So that is a juried showcase. So we select a anonymous jury every year of local art enthusiasts and regional art enthusiasts or people that work in the field. Luckily, we've been working with Oakley City and we've been able to expand the show to be outdoors and indoors. Previously, it was only indoors, but since COVID, we pivoted and now we've realized that we can really take over that really great large parking lot. So we've been able to add more artists and artisanal vendors than ever. And it's, again, a really great showcase of not only fine art, but of ceramics. I think we have some local produce, artisanal goods, so it'll be a really fun show.
Okay. Jocelyn, anything else you want to mention?
That's all. Just visit pcscarts.org. If you're interested in any of these events, we have a calendar that is chock full with information about all of these arts and culture happenings. And please go support all your local artists this weekend. It's great opportunities.
Okay. Jocelyn Scudder, Peg Bodell, thanks so much for your time. The Park City Council will discuss two plans about the future of the Bonanza Park neighborhood today. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has details.
The City Council will begin Thursday's meeting with a discussion about the Bonanza Park Small Area Plan, which is a strategic blueprint for the neighborhood bordered by Park Avenue, Kearns Boulevard, and Deer Valley Drive. One key plan recommendation is to create a new mixed-use zone to guide future growth. The zone would include a density bonus that allows developers to build up to 45 feet if they offer defined community benefits, such as public outdoor space, affordable housing, or underground parking. Park City Manager Matt Dias said the City Council and Planning Commission are scheduling a joint meeting to refine the details.
This is a relatively urban area at the bottom of a box canyon that has traffic and congestion, but it can also be incredibly vibrant. It can be a locals area. It can be connected in a way that it isn't today.
Several property owners in the neighborhood have approached the city about redeveloping. The new rules are designed to encourage private developers to help Park City build the walkable, livable Bonanza Park it envisions. A public hearing is scheduled for the small area plan Thursday. No vote will be taken, and the discussion will be continued to the council's July 11th meeting. The second item on Thursday's agenda is about the city's plans to develop an empty 5-acre site in Bonanza Park into a mixed project with housing, commercial space, and a new home for the Kimball Arts Center. The city is aiming to finalize details to submit a request for proposal or RFP later this year. The meeting begins at 3:30 at City Hall Thursday. The agenda and a link to attend virtually can be found at kpcw.org. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, a controversial Snyderville Basin Addiction Treatment Center announced expansion intentions at a check-in with Summit County planning officials. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports Wasatch Crest would add 8 beds.
When the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission first okayed Wasatch Crest Treatment Services location in the Highland Estates neighborhood in November of 2022, they mandated a one-year checkup. That checkup happened this June. County planning staff report the rehab center, which initially drew vocal criticism from Highland Estates residents, has had 0 reported complaints and is complying with county regulations. The favorable review comes ahead of a possible expansion. Wasatch Crest wants approval to grow from 16 beds to 24. It filed an application to expand earlier this year. The Highland Estates facility houses only women, and Wasatch Crest's men's facility is in Heber. Founder Jim Huffman says the new location has bolstered the program's overall success.
Since shifting to the gender-specific model, our completion rates now are between kind of 88 and about 95%. Versus industry averages of around 60 to 65.
Back in 2022, Wasatch Crest applied for 32 beds, but after numerous public hearings, planning commissioners only approved half of that. The commission also said patients detoxifying from substance addiction wouldn't be allowed. Instead, the facility serves as a longer-term group recovery program, with patients and residents between 30 and 90 days. June 11th, Commissioner Matt Nagy asked Huffman if he envisioned expanding to 32 beds somewhere down the line. Huffman said no.
That was also tied to a different use. It was a more of a transitional living model in half of the facility, and so there were some differences there. But I think in a residential treatment model, I think 24 is the right number.
County Planner Ray Milliner says they wouldn't need to change the building at all. There are 16 rooms, so half would be double occupancy and half would be singles. Although county planners have received Wasatch Crest's conditional use permit application, June 11th was simply a preliminary discussion. The permit process will require at least one public hearing, which hasn't been scheduled yet. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.